Isaiah, the last chapter, the 66th chapter. And we thought we had this fixed, and now it's not working again. I'm going to let you run it, Tommy. You just have to hang on and follow me. Nothing like electronics when they work. They don't even work now. There we go. Last night, I don't know how many of y'all have been around your kids or grandkids and seen what passes for cartoons today, but they're pretty weak. They're not much. I told you about electronics. This nothing's working here. Time out. It's not my day. Let's try that one. Now, it was working a while ago. I must have killed the battery.
Anyway, cartoons today. I don't know if you've seen any of your kids or grandkids' cartoons, but let's just say they're not our cartoons, okay? They have seriously changed. I even hate the theme songs for most of them. I don't even want to watch the cartoon, but last night I was looking. One of my favorite cartoons of all time is the old Looney Tunes, the old Bugs Bunny cartoon, where he shows up in the Ozark Mountains. And he pops up out of the ground, and the old buzzard's sitting up there and comes after him. And he says, "What comes after three and counting, Pappy?" And he says, "Foe." And when he says "foe," he pulls the trigger, and by then, Bugs Bunny's done run a pipe back up there, and he shoots his daddy. And the crow starts jumping around. I plugged the rabbit critter, Pappy. I plugged the rabbit critter. And daddy sat in the tree and says, "You didn't plug the rabbit critter, boy. You plugged your Pappy." I love that cartoon. It doesn't take much to entertain me. And so I got to looking around last night, and I don't even know what David found something, and I got to looking on the internet and found all these Looney Tunes cartoons and was going through some of my favorites and watching them. And Tenzi came in there, and she's never seen good cartoons. All she knows is, SpongeBob and some of these other craziness. But, when there's nothing better than a coyote going off a cliff. I mean, it just don't get any better than that. Or the abominable snowman taking Daddy up and stroking him and saying, "I'll stroke his pretty beard," and just popping his head back and forth. And it just doesn't, they just don't come any better than Looney Tunes do to Jason. Jason's with me. Me and Jason stare around sometimes and quote Looney Tunes back at each other. They just don't get any better than that. And one of my favorite stories are the ones where Elmer Fudd's hunting. And one of the things that is a great advantage to Bugs is he knows who's hunting him. He knows that Elmer Fudd is not a very good shot. If you ever watch him, the shotgun, he can't get a rabbit. That's pretty bad. And he also knows that Elmer Fudd has bad equipment, but that he has a gun that has a barrel made of something that he can tie it in a knot if he wants to, or if he wants him to stick his finger in the end of it, and if Elmer pulls the trigger, it blows up and shoots him. It's good to know who's hunting you. It's good to know what who's pursuing you and what they're looking for and what they're searching for. Unfortunately, most of us today in our society have a really poor idea of what it is that God is looking for. We just really struggle with what God is searching for in our life. We are, and it's based on the problem is it comes out of how we are wired. We are geared a certain way for the most part. I mean, there are exceptions and there are individuals and there are times, but for the most part, we are wired much like one of my favorite lines out of an old song is, "If you got no more money, honey, I got no more time." That's generally the way we're wired. What's in it for me? We've even got another phrase. What it is? You scratch my back. Have you ever thought about this? Why isn't it I scratch your back if you scratch mine? It's first, you scratch my back, then I'll scratch yours. I want to know, what's in it for me? What can I get out of this situation? What can I get out of this relationship? Let's face it, we are wired that way. That we are geared, we are set up looking for, our relationships are often based on what the other one does for the other one. Is it monetary? We pick friends. Think about it. You go back to high school. Some of you remember when you first got your car, how many friends you got. In case you didn't realize it, or you haven't realized it yet, they didn't like you. They needed a ride. Just hate to burst your bubble here, but in case you didn't realize that, that. That's just the way we work. And so that has a problem. It kind of functions well for us. We've learned to deal with that. We've learned to accept that. Think about it. There are people that when we hear their voice on the phone, if we see their name on caller ID, we know they want something. You know, we've kind of learned there's a tension among us that's just kind of the way life sort of is. Everybody's kind of looking out for themselves. What's in it for me? You know, what can I get out of this arrangement, this relationship? You know, it's just the way we are. It's the supply and demand. You know, whatever, the free market. You know, you come into the business, you give me a certain amount of money, I'll give you a certain amount of product. That's just the way we are. Unfortunately, it carries over into our relationship with God, and perhaps always has. It goes back basically as long as man has been on the earth, and we feel like, well, whatever we do for God, God should return that, and he should be pleased to have us. And that's really what was going on in this passage in Isaiah. It went on in other places in the Bible. God, we will build you a temple, and you should protect us for that. God, we will make all these gold pieces of furniture. We will place them in your tabernacle, and we will go ever so often, and we will offer up a sacrifice. And for that, you should feed us, clothe us, keep us happy, healthy, wealthy, and wise. That, you know, we just operate that way, and really and truly, we're still that way today. Think about it. How many of you have heard somebody say something like this? I've been going to church, I've been giving my offering, I've been working in the church, and I just don't understand why this has happened to me. You ever heard somebody make a statement like that? This is your SOR. Wake up! Yeah, listen. Yeah, we're going to be out there if y'all don't help. Yeah, that's just the way we are. We're kind of right. I don't understand why this is happening to me. I don't understand why this happened to my family. I don't understand why that happened to him. He's such a good guy. He goes to church every Sunday. Well, I wonder why that happened to him. There's all kinds of drunks and drugs. Why did it happen to them? You know, we think that way. We are wired in that manner. Well, you know, I did this, God. Okay, Lord, I gave you an offering today, so therefore, I should have a good week. You know, I preached a sermon this morning. I taught a Sunday school lesson, so I should have a good day. You know, and we kind of operate on this bartering act. I don't know if it goes back, to coming to America and swapping beads for that. I don't know where that goes to. We operate on this bartering system with God. You know, God, I'll give you so-and-so, and in turn, you do this for me. And we think God is pleased with that. We think that's what God is looking for, even though the Bible is filled with examples where that's not how it works, where that's not how the system is. That God shows us repeatedly that God's not looking for our stuff. He's not looking for us to do something for Him. That our relationship with Him, everyone here knows how foolish that argument is, because we know folks who have never darkened the church door a day in their life, never put one red cent in the offering plate, never sung a song, never taught a lesson, never preached a sermon, and they are living, use the phrase, high on the hog. On the other hand, we know people who are good, godly, God-fearing in church every time the doors are open, and it seems like they just can't catch a breath. Yeah. Well, we just know that that's not real. So what's the problem? What is God hunting for? You know, what is the hunter looking for? When he looks at us, what is it that he desires? What is he looking for in our life? If we can't buy our way, earn our way, you know, if we can't give our way, if we can't do that, what's the problem? That's what Isaiah is dealing with here in this chapter. The Israelites are kind of sitting back all fat and sassy. We built God a tabernacle now. He should be happy. Yeah. You know, he should be filled to death with us. He ought to keep us safe from the Philistines and all those other, the Heites and all the Israelites. You know, he should protect us because we built him a tabernacle. And God responds to that in this verse of the passage with some words that I think are extremely still relevant today, because we still function that way. I go to church, I give, I do, I work, I pray, I sing, I teach. Therefore, God should do this for me. Well, here's the problem. That's not the rule. That's not what God is looking for. In the first verse of chapter 66, we see it displayed to us. God makes a statement there when he shows us his power. In that verse, he tells us what he's looking for. I'm going to try my little button one more time. Never mind. Push the button, Tommy. Yeah, God tells us what he's looking for. When he shows us something, he shows us his position. But look at this verse. This is a great verse when you look at it. And you really have to take it apart, kind of bit by bit. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that you build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? Let's think about what God says in that verse. He says, first of all, he says, heaven is my throne. Now, as I think about that verse, there are several words in there that really stand out in that phrase. Heaven is a place that, as I think about it, I don't know that there's a group of people, a religious group of any denomination, even the unreligious, who don't consider heaven to pretty much be the pinnacle. Would you agree with that? Everybody may disagree on how you get there, but everybody thinks heaven's it, right? Heaven's as good as it gets. That's why, sometimes we make statements like, this is heaven on earth. I'm in heaven. Even atheists. Heaven is the top. That's it. That's as good as it gets. Regardless, you may disagree on how to get there. Some people, believe you got to earn it, whatever, but they're working their way towards heaven. Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Baptist, Methodist, we all have heaven as our goal. Well, look what God says. He says, heaven is my throne. Now, what are you doing with that? You sit on it. Where do you have to be? If you're sitting on something, where are you? You're on top of it. So in our mind, we're saying heaven is the pinnacle. God says, that's fine. I'm sitting on your pinnacle. Your peak, your best, the thing that you envision to be the ultimate, God says, I am sitting on it. Now, there's one other way in that verse that really stands out in that phrase. He says, heaven is my throne. He says that I own it. Your pinnacle, I'm sitting on it, and it's mine. It's not a God throne. He's not holding a seat for someone else. You ever been in line or something like, hold my spot? Now, God is not holding the spot for someone else to come along. As we're going to think about how do we please God? What is God looking for in us? It's important to understand where God is right now. Think about it. We just came through Christmas, and what is all the things we consider we're buying Christmas presents? Well, I think I'll get him a blue shirt. No, he's already got a blue shirt. Well, I think I'll get him a calculator. No, he's already got a calculator. I think I'll get him an ink pen. He's already got an ink pen. So we've really got to think about who this God is that we're trying to please. First thing we understand here is his position. He says, I am sitting on what you consider to be the pinnacle, and I own it. It is mine. You cannot give me a place or thing. What is that? If we've already said heaven is the pinnacle, and God says, I got it. I don't need that. I'm sitting on it. Think about it, think about the image of that statement. God says that the thing you value the most, listen, I don't care what you might say is not. Here's something I know about everybody in this room. Not a doubt in my mind or you wouldn't be there. You want to get to heaven somehow. We may have in this group, we may even have disagreement on how you get there. But if you're here this morning, I know one thing about you. You want to get to heaven, you consider that as good as it gets. And God says, I already got it. I'm sitting on it. It's my chair. The thing you value the most, God says, I am sitting on it. While I sit on the pinnacle of heaven, he says, the earth is my footstool. Now, I don't know about you, but I have a way too active imagination. My imagination is way too good for my own good. I have no problem whatsoever envisioning this statement. God sitting on the throne of heaven, kicked back with his feet, threw up on earth. I just have no problem at all seeing that. Now, I'll be honest with you, the only person I know in this world who has footstools, and others know, I just never have noticed them, is my grandma. And you go in her house sometimes, and she'll be sitting over there in her seat on the couch with her newspaper, and I don't have one here, with her feet up on her footstool. There's no question who's the boss there. She's sitting through back with her feet up on that stool, reading the paper, drinking a Coke, eating a pack of cutters, like she's the queen of the world. And I have no problem whatsoever in my mind. You know what God looks like asking. I describe it to you. I can see it. I have no problem whatsoever. God sitting on the throne of heaven with his feet propped up on earth. Think about that statement for a moment. God says, I'm sitting on heaven, my feet propped up on earth. Think about the magnitude of that statement. God says, I am sitting on heaven and my feet are propped on earth. Let's think about the earth for a moment. We're sitting here today. You know what the weather forecast is. Yeah. So somebody said, do you think it'll snow tomorrow? I don't know. Yeah. I have no clue. Yeah. I know this. I don't have a say-so in it. I know if it does, it does. If it don't, it don't. Yeah. It may be 100 tomorrow. I don't know. Yeah. It may snow 5 feet deep. It may. We may have a tornado. I don't know. I know I don't know anything about it. I know I can't do anything about it except duck. Yeah, that's all I do. You know, cover up and hope. Yeah, that's all I know about. Will the river overflow? I don't know. Can't control it. Yeah, I have no say-so over it. There's been a whole lot of days that I wish that a day wasn't 24 hours long. I wish I could flip the earth like a globe, spun that baby a little quicker and got this day over with. There have been days that I wish I could have grabbed hold of it and said, let's just let this one last a little longer. I have no say-so in it. No say-so in it. There have been days just like today where I wish I could have grabbed the earth, and right now I guess it's tilted, you know, this way away from that sun. I wish I could have grabbed the hold of it and tilted it over towards the sun a little bit more. It's cold out there this morning. But you know what? I have no say-so in it. God says, I'm sitting on earth. I'm sitting on the throne of heaven with my feet propped up on earth. That's his position. I'm sitting there on the throne of heaven with my feet propped up on earth. That's in charge right there. That's authority. When you sit on the throne of heaven and prop your feet up on the planets. And look what he says again. The earth is my footstool. I'm not borrowing. Listen, I've been to my grandma's before. I put my feet on her footstool. And sometimes she comes in and says, move, and I won't. You know, but if it comes down to it, it's her footstool. I'm just borrowing it. Listen, here's what God says. He says, heaven is my throne. Earth is my footstool. Therefore, what are you going to build me? Yeah, what are you going to do? If I'm sitting on the throne of heaven, propping my feet up on top of the earth, God, I will give you the mountains. He says, I'm good, got some. You know? God, I will give you an ocean. Good, I got a few. You know? God, I'll give you a planet. Trust me, I just prop my feet up on them. You know? Well, God says, you know, I'm sitting on heaven. How could you build me a house and then look at it and go, yeah, I think I'll move. Yeah. You remember Andy Griffith said that time where there were three or four of them thinking about swapping around house to house. Barney was going to sell them each other's house. And they were going to move. And one of them, the basement was flooding. One of them, the furnace didn't work. Yeah. What kind of house are we going to build, God? And God said, you know, that's great. I like that. You know, God, I'm going to give you some money. I got that. You know, I'm going to bring you some cattle. He says, I already own all the cattle. You know, what can you? He says, God says, I'm sitting on heaven with my feet propped up on earth. What will you build me? Where can you build me a place? He said, how can you build me a place of rest? I'm already kicked back with my feet through up on the throne of heaven. You know, he says, it doesn't get it. What can we possibly do for God? So you said, I mean, Jim, you're depressing me. You know, you're worrying me. I can't do anything God wants, anything God needs. I didn't say you couldn't do anything God wants. I said you couldn't do anything God needs. He says, I'm sitting on heaven with my feet threw up on a footstool. Where is my place of rest? Here's why. Because then we see his power. Look what he says in this next verse. He says, because all those things I made. Suppose you could give God the earth. He said, but I made it. I remember a television show one time where the man in the television show, it was his birthday, and the wife and kids were discussing what they were going to get the man for his birthday. And the wife says to the son, run upstairs and get in your daddy's drawer and get him out of tie. And send his daughter over and says, go over there and get his bowling ball. And so they get him all the stuff he already owns and wrap it up. And that's his birthday present. You know, listen, that's what God says. You say, God, I tell you what, I'm going to make something for you. I'm going to go. He says, fine, but you're using my stuff. Yeah, listen, let's be honest. Let's just face it. We've been there. If you're a parent, you're a grandparent, you've been around kids, you know this story. We just came through Christmas. It's, you know, the kids want to go out. You know, when they're really small, they say, I want to go out and I want to get you something for Christmas, Mommy. Can you give me some money? Yeah, it's kind of a weird little exchange there. You know, can I have some money? I need to get you something for Christmas. You know, I need to get you something for your birthday. Can I borrow some money? You know what borrow money from your children means, right? Nothing. Can I get some money? I need to go get you a Christmas present. Well, that's basically what God says here. God says, what are you going to give me? You're going to make me something out of gold? It's my gold. Yeah, you're going to make me you're going to make me something. You're going to build me a great big house. You built it out of my trees. You came into my forest, stole my trees, used my ability to build me a house. Here's what it boils down to. We have this discussion. We have this every now and then on the table. Paul every now and then will tell me something is his. I said, what you need to understand is that may be yours, but I own you. By default, whatever you own, I own. I will kill you and then it'll all be mine. That's just... It gets the point across, David. You may listen better than mine. I have to drive the point home hard. Listen. David told me one time about it being his room. I said, your room's in my house. Listen, that's just the way it works. Well, that's basically what God is saying. God is saying, what are you going to give me? Think about it. If you somehow could go out and you had the power to create something, where'd you get the power? Where'd you get the breath? Where did you get the ability? Think about it. This is kind of a somber illustration, but I think it really drives the point home. I use this at 8:30. I'm going to modify it just a little bit. There's someone this week, we know it's true, somewhere, somebody in America or somewhere in the world this week has really worked and prepared a special song they were going to sing this morning. And they didn't wake up this morning. And they never got to sing that song. There is most likely a preacher somewhere who really studied and worked really hard preparing, and he thought, man, I've got the best sermon I've ever prepared. But he never woke up. And he'll never preach that sermon. There's a Sunday school teacher somewhere who has been studying for 2 or 3 weeks now, knowing this was their Sunday to teach, and has really worked and prepared and went through commentaries and went through their Sunday school book and made notes and prepared. And those notes and those books, they're laying on the nightstand right where they left them when they lay down. God says, anything you give me is contingent on me giving you breath, on me giving you one more day. He says, whatever you give me, it is given to me with my power. It's given to me with my gift. We see his position, his power. He said, well, what in the world can I do? How in the world can I, what can I do? What is God looking for? Because we're so geared to say, what can I give God? What can I do for God? What can I provide him? Well, here's what he's looking for. In the last half of this verse, we see his priority. Look what he says. There are several things in that verse that I want you to see. He says, first of all, this man will I look. This man will I regard. This man will I pay attention to. The man who has a poor spirit, the man who has a contrite spirit, and the man that trembles at my word. The man with a poor spirit, a contrite spirit, and trembles at my word. Now, I've got to tell you that the phrase there, poor and contrite spirit, is they're really basically two of the same thing. They're really either word would suffice, but here's something I've learned. Anytime God says something once, it's really important. Anytime he says something twice, you better sit up and really pay attention. And so God says, I'm not looking for what you can give me. I already own it all. It's already all mine. But here's what I want. I want you. I want you to be poor and contrite. Now, somebody say, oh, he was poor. I'm it. I'm it. He's got it. I'm his number one servant if he's looking for poor. I'm his. No, unfortunately, that's not what he means. Poor basically means humble. Poor basically means broken, dependent on God. God says, I know someone who realizes they can't give me anything because they are totally dependent on me. I want someone who realizes that they can't do anything without me, that they can't possibly make me happy. The only thing I'm looking for is for them, that I am everything to them. And I got to tell you, you say, I don't know if I like that. I love that. You know why? Because if I had to impress him, I don't know where I would fall in the scheme of things. Listen, there are a few folks like Bill Gates, those in the Walton family, Walmart family, that group. There are a few of those that could get the rest of us kicked out. Listen, look around this room. Think about it. If we don't line them up by worth, where would you rank in this room? Listen, let's be honest. Some of us wouldn't even get in the door of this room if we were lining up by worth. I thank God that it's not based on how good I am, what I can give him. You know, listen, I've told you before, when we got ready to adopt Kenzie, somebody said, how'd the kids take it? I said, they loved it. I said, really? I said, because that means when I die, that's one more person for them to split the bills with. You know, they had divided up in fourths instead of thirds. You know, listen, you know, God says to us, you know, that He wants us, when it comes, He says, I want us to realize that we are dependent on Him. He says, I want him a poor spirit, of contrite spirit. The only real difference in poor and contrite is the word contrite really comes up and adds this phrase to the real meaning in the original language, dependent on divine help. You know, that it's not just that I need help, but I need God's help. You know, it's not like I can say, all right, you know, David, Martin, Tim, let's get together, we can do this. No, we can't. You know, because we may not wake up in the morning. We may not wake up. God is saying, I'm looking for someone. It's not a matter of what you can do. Listen, again, Bill Gates could buy us and sell us. You know, there are people today who will make more interest today than most of us will make in our lifetime. You know, we come in, I could sell everything I've got, turn everything I've got into cash, bring it in here, put it in the open place, say, God, are you impressed with that? And there would be one of those oil sheiks from Saudi Arabia who'd walk in, pull out his pocket change, he's walking around money, as some people call it, and he'd peel off more than that, just out of his walking around money. And I'd be out the door. God said, it's not about what you can build me. It's not about what you can give me. I want somebody. I'm looking for someone who is totally dependent on me. Someone that is totally dependent on me and trembles at my word. So what's that mean? It's kind of interesting because, you know, does that mean we should look at the Bible and go, ooh, I can't touch that. You know, ooh, I better not get too close. Now, what he's saying is, I think this one's really a real kick in the head for most of us. He says, I don't want somebody who just knows my word. I want somebody who obeys my word. You know, in some ways, we live in a very illiterate biblical society today. In other ways, we live in a society, in particular, I think, in the church, where people probably have as much understanding, or at least access to understanding, the Word of God as we ever had in time. We've got some great theologians, great books, access to the Internet, library, tons of books, information all around us. If you want to understand the Bible verse, you can understand it. You know? Listen, you can figure it out. You might have to dig. You might have to hunt. But there's a book, there's a person, there's a website somewhere out there where you can figure out what a verse means, what a passage means. You know what? Knowing what it means is not what God's talking about. God says, I want somebody who knows what it means and obeys it. God says, I'm looking for someone who recognizes they are dependent on me and who is obedient to my word. You know what's great about that? The poorest among us, financially speaking, can do that. The richest among us can do that. And everywhere in between. It doesn't matter where you were raised. It doesn't matter how you were raised. It doesn't matter how rich you are, how poor you are. It doesn't matter what kind of house you live in. It doesn't matter how much your offering is for the year. It doesn't matter whether you teach a class or don't. It doesn't matter whether you can sing or not. It doesn't matter whether you preach or not. It doesn't matter if you play an instrument or not. It doesn't matter if you take up the offering, if you send those. It doesn't matter. God says, I'm looking for someone who is dependent on me and is obedient to my word. I don't know about you, but I'm thankful for that. I'm not saying I always do, but I can. If he was wanting stuff, I'd be in trouble. If he was wanting money, if he was wanting some great sacrifice, I'd have a problem. God simply wants us to depend on him and be obedient to his word. As our musicians come this morning, really simple question for you this morning. Question is not what have you done? What have you given? What talent do you have? The question is very simple. Are you depending on your own strength, your own abilities, or are you trusting in God?